Hallo und willkommen zur neuen Folge Open Court hier beim FC Bayern Basketball. Zu Gast Spencer Dinwiddie. Und den habt ihr wahrscheinlich abgespeichert als NBA-Spieler. Unter anderem bei den Dallas Mavericks, zuletzt bei den Charlotte Hornets, jetzt aber Teil des FC Bayern Basketball. Wie das zustande kam, so spät in der Saison. Wie seine bisherige NBA-Karriere eigentlich so lief. Warum er sich selber als Träumer bezeichnet und warum er heutzutage abends professionell Roblox-Videos schaut, das erfahrt ihr alles heute in der Folge. Viel Spaß mit Spencer Dinwiddie. And I'm not gonna lie, today's guest, Spencer Dinwiddie, I was not expecting you to be here at Bayern Munich for the season.
Probably to start the season, I wasn't expecting to be here either.
Because, you know, usually I cover the NBA, and we have this preview magazine. I vividly remember, it was only a couple of weeks ago, I was writing the Charlotte Hornets preview, and I was like, right. Obviously, they have one guy too many on their roster.
Yeah.
But I was figuring out like, who they're going to cut, who they're going to buy out. And I was like, right, it's got to be Pat Connaughton. You know, he didn't really play at Milwaukee last year. You know, a little older. But they won't cut Spencer Dinwiddie. They just signed him. You know, he's here.
Yeah.
They need an adult in the room. Yeah. You know, the guy has shown that he can perform in the NBA.
Yeah.
Surely he's going to be there.
Yeah.
And now we're sitting here on a red velvety sofa at the B&B Park.
Yeah.
So take me through that whole process from, you know, getting cut from the Charlotte Hornets to us being here.
It was kind of a whirlwind, to be honest. Obviously, you know, Charlotte said they were going to go in a different direction, which, you know, was cool. You know, I understand they're a young team and have the roster that they want, that they feel sets them up best for the future. So that was, you know, a respectable business decision on their end. Then from there, obviously, you know, my agent was just giving me the options of, you know, various places to play, NBA and, you know, what non-guarantees or waiting looks like, along with China, various EuroLeague teams. I think at the end of the day, you know, having familiarity with coach was big. And then also just, you know, nice city, great facilities. And I want to give EuroLeague a shot.
So it was obviously your decision, but what went into your thinking? You said you were familiar with coach. How do you know Gordon Herbert?
He was an assistant coach with the Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, right.
When I was there, when I was a lot younger. So, you know, knew him from that time period.
So did he reach out to you?
Yeah. He was one of the coaches that called. We got on the phone. We talked a little bit. So that was cool.
So obviously, during your NBA career, you had a couple of, you know, weird detours. You know, being drafted in the second round, then going via the G League after not really getting any chance, basically in Detroit. So, was it hard for you to just say no to any NBA offer at this point of your career? Were you just ready for something else?
I think it's interesting. It's kind of a weird time period, right? Like in my career, I think, you know, you can sign on to be a mentor. Also, obviously, can still play. I had multiple 30-point games, stuff like that last year. And so it's seeing, you know, are you with a competitive team that maybe you help win? Or are you, you know what I'm saying, with a young team that you're kind of doing the mentor thing? And, you know, also the difference in how people view age in the different leagues. You know, 32 is considered old, you know what I'm saying, in the NBA. Out here, it's considered your prime. You know, people play till 40. I think it's just kind of an interesting spot. And then, you know, seeing what happens next, if there is, you know, a competitive team that comes calling, or, you know, if we're blessed to win a title here.
So the NBA offers you got were basically just, you know, as a mentor at the end of the bench, or?
For the most part, that's what we're looking at. But, you know, it's all good.
So obviously you touched on Nolan Gordon Herbert, but did you reach out to like Greg Monroe? I understand he was basically your vet when you started with the Pistons.
Moose was my vet when I started out with the Pistons. He's a great guy. I mean, the person I talked to the most was actually Maxi Kleber.
Oh right, yeah.
Yeah, because he obviously not only like played here, but really knows Germany for real. So he said it would be a great situation. He said I have a lot of fun. So that was one of the people that I spent some time with on the phone too.
So do you view this as an just like a step in between maybe NBA and, teams, or is it something that could also be the next part of your basketball journey?
I'm open.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, it's an interesting spot. I'm very open. I think, you know, playing and competing and having a chance to win Every night is always going to be fun and appealing in whatever league that's in. And just, I think, enjoying the process and the time I have left to be at a high level, you know, because it doesn't last forever. So, you know, it's been cool to be able to spend 11 years in the NBA, you know, most of which were, I think, at a pretty high level and still be able to kind of, you know, do some of that.
And obviously, like as I said, early in your NBA career, you had to, you know, prove all the doubters wrong. I mean, you came into the NBA with an ACL tear and decided, no, I'm going to get drafted. I'm nice. You know, I'm going to outplay people. I'm going to prove people wrong. But I think, you know, maybe we have to explain this to the listeners or to the viewers on YouTube. It's not always about how good you can play basketball in the NBA. There's a lot of politics involved, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, like you said, I think, you know, the draft process for me was interesting. I didn't have anybody in my family that's been to the NBA. I didn't, you know, have any prior knowledge. Obviously, you're just kind of working with the feedback that the, you know, draft committee gives you along with some agents and stuff like that. But yeah, just personally having that confidence, and I wanted to go. So that's why I left, even though I was coming off ACL tear, you know, so I fell from the lottery to the second round. And, you know, that's just kind of a part of it. But what you do realize is if you are a second round pick and they're not necessarily investing in you, then you kind of get a short leash and you can be out of the league pretty quick. So, you know, I had 2 years where I basically didn't play and then was able to obviously kind of stay in the league, get back in the league. It was a very quick stint with Chicago and the Windy City and all that stuff to basically Brooklyn. And, you know, to be honest, the same way injuries took a lot from me, injuries gave a lot to me because, you know, if Jeremy Lin doesn't get hurt, like, you know, maybe I don't play, right? Like, and maybe that first year in Brooklyn, then I'm in Bayern Munich a lot earlier, right? But, you know, he got hurt. I was able to show flashes, show signs. And, you know, after that, you know, then you kind of can't put it back in the bottle after that. So, you know, I was blessed to be able to play and, you know, be good. And like you said, politics and things are a part of it, right? It's a business. So, you know, young talent, et cetera, like whatever generates the most revenue is what's going to kind of be a thing in the league. So, you know, you got to maintain favor while you can. And, you know, if you lose it, then you can be the odd man out.
And I think also people don't realize how important the human connections are. I mean, obviously you went through the, I think they're the Windy City Bulls as well, right? Yeah. So, and there you got the chance. There you had a coach that believed in you. And I think that is something that, especially new players who are not the superstars and not coming in and the franchises are invested in, they just need somebody to believe in them, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because, I mean, I say this all the time, right? Like, there's probably 1,000 players on the planet that could play in the NBA, roughly, right? We probably got the, 600, 700 spots or something like that. So it's probably another, 300 or so guys that really can play in the NBA. And it's just going to come down to everything. Did a coach believe in you? Did a GM like you? Were you hurt? Are you a little bit too short? Is there some aspect of your game that they don't necessarily love? What are your daily habits like? Are you late? Are you on time? Are you a good pro? Like all these things, and they kind of are what kind of separate guys. But you know, it's for me, it definitely was a couple different times when a coach believed in me enough to give me the ball, let me kind of play, and then like I said, talent kind of shown. So you know, Nate Linzer with Windy City, Kenny Atkinson with Brooklyn, Jay Kidd with Dallas. Also shout out Sean Sweeney's assistant coach, but probably my favorite coach ever. So yeah, you know, those situations, like, they just, you know, if you do have the style of game that I have where I can make plays, like, sometimes it really just takes somebody saying, here's the basketball, like, be you, and then the rest will be okay.
Fun fact, by the way, you obviously know the 6 degrees of separation, that you're, you know, just six degrees of separation away from every man, every human being. We are two people that separate because Kenny Atkinson played with Chris Fleming. You might know him, the assistant coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Used to be Portland. And I played against him in the second league over here. So it's just, it's just funny how connections work.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But Kenny Atkinson, I mean, he must be maybe the most important coach in your journey, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in my pro career, probably. I mean, him or Nate Linzer, I would say. You know, I mean, just because of the timeline of it. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like in the actual NBA, for sure, Kenny. Because without Kenny and without that, like belief because we also had other guys at the time, you know, Isaiah Whitehead, you know, just, I mean, shoot, D'Angelo was there, Karis, like all that stuff. And obviously I had to play with them. So it wasn't just like, hey, here, Spencer, mm-hmm. you're above everybody, whatever. But, you know, being in that rotation and still having those carve outs and those moments where he'd be like, okay, I need you to, you know, showcase whether it be your ability to get to the rim or draw fouls, whatever it is. It just allowed me to kind of do that. So for sure.
And I mean, these Nets teams, I found them fascinating because obviously Atkinson came in, first year head coach. You know, they just had this horrible idea, you know, just go horribly wrong with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and all them. And then you've all these, what's the right word? Misfits, maybe. You know, like players, you know, who were like, you know, other places, they were just told them, like, look, no, we can't really rely on them. Yeah. You, like I said, you, D'Angelo, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen. And then you guys meshed just exceptionally well during these years. It must have been fun because there were no expectations. You had a coach who was trying, you know, to make his own name. And you guys played fast, played wild. It was fun, right?
Oh, a ton of fun. I mean, obviously, those clips of the guys dancing and stuff still go viral every now and then. Theo Pinson is still one of my good friends. Shabazz Napier was on that team. I know he played here. So that was fun. I mean, but you come across a bunch of guys in the league. And, you know, what I remember most from, or some of the most things that I remember from that Brooklyn stint would be like Brook Lopez. I mean, is one of the most talented guys I've ever played with. Mm-hmm. You know, his ability to morph and change his game style to fit the whatever the current playing style of the NBA is, I don't think it's talked about enough. Like I said, Jeremy Lin was great. You know, Damari Carroll was a great vet along with Jared Dudley. You know, you just come across a ton of people along the way.
And I think people always think that whatever team you're playing on, it's just great vibes or whatever. But that's just not the case. You know?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. You know, a combination of whether it be personalities or success, I mean, always are going to affect different things. I think, you know, one of the hallmarks of that team were we were kind of too young to know any different. So, you know, there weren't contracts in play and other stuff that people were worried about. It wasn't the business hadn't necessarily hit that team yet. Like, you look at the guys that were really playing, Jared Allen, rookie contract, Joe Harris, you know, misfit, me, misfit. Caris LeVert, rookie contract. D'Angelo, rookie contract. You know, Damari Carroll and Jared Dudley were already basically on the way out, so they're already kind of done. Ed Davis, one of the best vets I've ever had. Yeah. You know, just great, phenomenal dude. You know, wanted to just rebound and do his job. And so you had this kind of combination of people that wanted to do their job, and then the talent was, you know, wide-eyed and learning and growing. And so, you know, that was it was a special blend of humans as well.
And pretty much everybody got paid in the process afterwards. I mean,
everybody I think did pretty well for themselves.
You just touched on the money part. I mean, obviously you play basketball because it's your passion. You're not getting to the NBA if you're not halfway in love with basketball. Yeah. So, but when the payday comes, does it change anything, or did it change anything for you in your approach for the game?
Oh, and the game? Nah. Yeah. You know, money just makes you more of who you are.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it just reveals it. So, you know, for me, obviously, I've dedicated my entire life to playing basketball, you know? So it's the only thing I ever wanted to do since I was 5 years old. Like, and that's even, you know, when Harvard was calling and whatever, like, you know, I told my family, like, I want to play basketball. So, you know, I still enjoy even just kind of the grind of it. You know, I train 6 days a week, 6 hours a day in the summer, like all the stuff. So, you know, like I said, at some point it'll stop and I'll probably play once a week in men's leagues or whatever. But like money or not, this is kind of what I wanted to do. Now, obviously, I'm able to do it with that level of time commitment. Mm-hmm. Because I'm able to take care of my family in the process. But I mean, since I was five, it's the only thing I can remember wanting to do.
But I can imagine that then off the court, once you sign that big contract, it just means, I guess, freedom, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, you make sure your family's good and then you can kind of chill if you want, but or you can keep going. And like I said, it's just, there's only so long to do it, you know? I mean, I tell people all the time, like, when I retire, the first 6 months to a year, I'm probably just gonna sleep, you know, sleep, recap. Like, it's been a long road, not just basketball wise, but off the court, right? Like, you know, dealt with a lot of different things. So, in a lot of ways, it's still my escape.
At the same time, I think you have to be in love with the grind, right? I mean, yeah. Because obviously you can't play for a championship every year. Yeah. You can't play for career highs or whatever. You can't play for the next contract. So what is it about the grind, about showing up, like you said, six times a week, taking care of your body, just coming to, like today, like coming to the gym on off days? Yeah. What makes you do it?
I mean, I would say probably two things. First and foremost, my dad, one of the lessons he always told me is, you know, never have regrets. He didn't want that type of pain because it don't go away, right? Like and what he meant by that, you know, wasn't to try a bunch of crazy stuff, right? Like, because he's not that type of guy. He's kind of more militant, but he meant, like, you know, if you practiced every day, if you shot every shot game speed, if you did all the little things, you took care of your body, then if you were to get hurt or something does go wrong, you miss a game winner, you have peace with it. Mm-hmm. Because you know the effort and the work that you put in, and you genuinely believe that was the best shot you could have took, and you genuinely believe you'll make the next one, right? But if you don't, you know, if you were lackadaisical, or you kind of, you know, excuse my language, half-assed it, mm-hmm. then you're going to have all that, you know, pain, fear, regret, anxiety, whatever it may be, and that's going to stick with you, and it's going to affect who you are down the road. So I would say that's one. And then also, just from a competition perspective, like, you know, I like winning. I like beating people. Like, it's like the whole thing. Like, why not?
And I think it's also the just seeing the ball go through the net. I mean, yeah. Basketball is a one team sport where you just grab that ball, you go to a hoop, and you just hoop. And yeah. it's no, I mean, obviously it's better to play 5-on-5, but it's good enough. You can do it for hours.
Oh yeah. Sometimes that 1-on-0 and just being in a gym by yourself is some of the best therapy in the world.
Yeah.
You get to clear your head, feel good, like, see it go through the net. You know what I'm saying? It's a great mental escape.
And I think the thing you touched on, when you give everything in preparation, when you have no excuses left because you did everything right, I also think that gives you kind of a freedom in what you do, and you can deal much better with, you know, failure because you knew you did your best, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I said. Like, you know what I'm saying? My dad always tried to tell me. I think that's why I operate the way I do on the court and just kind of in life.
So when you come over here, obviously your role changes. Mm-hmm. You know, you were, let's face it, at the end of the bench there in Charlotte, they wanted you as a vet. Now you come here and everybody's like, oh, there comes the NBA superstar, because people don't know a lot. But they've seen the game winners. They've seen you playing the Western Conference Final at Dallas.
Yeah.
So these expectations, do they change your approach? Or have you talked about coach about your role on the court for Bayern at all?
I mean, as far as my role on the court for Bayern, it's really just about, you know, making plays and trying to help the team win. We haven't gotten to any explicit, like, you need to average this, you need to do this. I think that's one beautiful thing that I've kind of seen about the EuroLeague game so far. Obviously, the game's shorter. Plays are a little bit longer, so, you know, the scores are a little bit different. I mean, a big-time game out here is like 15, 20 points, you know. So that was kind of a shock because, you know, in the league, it's like 30, 35, 40, right? Like, so that was different. But yeah, it's just about winning, you know. I mean, that's all I'm really here to do, compete at a high level and win. I feel like, you know, as far as an NBA career, like, I've done most of what you can do outside of obviously winning an NBA championship, especially when you consider being a second round pick and not being, like, you know, ushered in to win certain awards and things, like being on the, you know, sixth man of the year or most improved or like those type of ballots when you're not already a guy that's supposed to win. I mean, you know, even the year 21-7 with Brooklyn, with, you know, basically the whole team hurt, like, and being, I think we were 6th seed at the time, like, any other guy would have got an all-star selection for that. Mm. So, like, when you understand how it kind of works, you're just kind of like, oh, okay, like, I get it.
And by the way, your draft, I mean, that second round must have been maybe the best second round of all time.
Historic. Yeah. I mean, obviously you got
Jokic.
Yeah, probably the best player in the world right now, if not, you know, top, what, three. And goes down the all-time list, probably in the top, what, 15?
Well, maybe top 10.
Higher, yeah, maybe right? You got Jeremy Grant.
Yeah.
You got Jordan Clarkson. Myself, obviously. Yeah. You had several guys.
Yeah, Joe Harris, I think, was the same.
Joe Harris, yeah. That's my dog. Joe Harris. That's my dog. I miss Joe.
So, I guess you're right smack in the middle of adjusting to the FIBA game. Is there anything that in particular that you would say, well, that's kind of different and kind of weird?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's in the paint all the time, all the time. And one thing that I think is kind of dope, though, the plays are far more intricate, which is kind of interesting to see, like, why certain actions are ran based on personnel, stuff like that. So it is cool to see the different play styles and kind of still be a student of the game.
I think EuroLeague is a little bit, I guess, out of necessity. You have to be, you know, more precise with your plays because obviously in the NBA, basically everybody can shoot now.
Yeah.
You know, or you're a badass athlete, you can just roll to the basket, and that makes it kind of simpler, I guess, than the EuroLeague.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the NBA, and obviously, you know, haven't done it for so long, like you see a lot, but I would say about 80% of the playbooks are all the same.
Yeah.
They call it different stuff, but they're the same. There's probably like about 20% of the playbooks that are very specific to each team. But that's also because when you look at the game now, there's pretty much only going to play out of either 4-out 1-in spacing or 5-out spacing. And so the geometry of the game just changes because you also, you know, can't have any defensive 3 seconds. And then depending upon how many shooters are on the floor, it really takes away the help side. So it's all about manipulating matchups versus like specific schemes. So I wouldn't necessarily call one better or worse. I think it's kind of like if you're a great salsa dancer and you're a great ballet dancer, you know, it doesn't mean that one style of dance is better. So they're just different. You know what I'm saying? And some dancers can do both and some can't.
Yeah. And obviously, it's like I said, the skill level is just different. You know, it's one thing if you have like two guys on the court who can't shoot, you have to run different stuff to get everybody involved versus everybody can shoot.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's a lot more space in the NBA. You touched on it because you have the defensive 3 seconds.
Like, for the most part, like I said, if there's 1,000 players in the world, they have most of the best players in the world, like for sure. You know, there are some over here that definitely can play over there, like 1,000%. But yes, the density of talent is obviously higher.
Also, the density of the fans is a little higher in the EuroLeague, I would say.
No, from what I've seen, EuroLeague fans are better.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They go crazy.
Yeah.
For sure.
So have you heard any crazy stories about people, I don't know, like throwing coins and stuff? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people talk about that. They talk about that before I came. But I was like, yeah, we'll see.
It's going to be different.
I'm looking forward to experiencing it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think it's for everybody. You know, I mean, obviously in the States, college atmosphere, that's just where it's at. I think it's the most comparable to the EuroLeague over here. But these are like grown ass men and they are drunk and they're, I don't know if they're still smoking in Belgrade, but you know.
It's all good. I mean, to me, I think it is cool because I think in the NBA, you have a lot of fans of the specific players. Or it's a show, right? So like if you're, you know, going to a Knicks game, like it's a show.
Yeah.
You know, so all the stars there, it's a show. I think here, from what you've kind of touched on, like it is kind of more college where they're a fan of Bayern. Like that's who they're fans of. You know what I'm saying? They're repping their city, they're repping their team, like they are a fan of the team itself, regardless of the player. So I think there's a tribal nature to that, which is going to be cool to experience.
Let's get away from basketball for a moment. I mean, you're a guy of many interests. So how did that come about? I guess it's your parents' education or
yeah Yeah, I mean, I think my parents stressed education early. That was the priority. That's why I said, that's why they were upset I didn't choose Harvard. But, you know, it's all good. It worked out. And yeah, I mean, I think they also wanted me to dream. You know, they didn't really want to put limitations on things. And so kind of, you know, been able to kind of dream and look at life, look at the world, take risks and, you know, kind of have fun with it.
Yeah, you actually said that in an interview, that the ability to dream as a kid was so important for you, because yeah. I think you said, I could have told my parents I want to be an astronaut, and they would be like, yeah, sure, yeah. Go ahead and do that. And I think that's very liberating as a kid, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. And I think, obviously within reason, but for the most part, I mean, I think you want your kids, and, you know, I have two boys, like, you want them to grow up pushing the limits and trying to be the best version of themselves. Like, you know, you're not trying to put a artificial ceiling on them for your own fears. Like, why would you do that?
And I think also, how can you explore what you're good at or what yeah. your interests are if there's a cap on it right away, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you, if you have that there, then you may not ever know.
So your kids are how old?
7 and roughly 2.
Oh, okay. Our daughter's 8, so I can kind of relate from that age. And that's kind of the age. I mean, all the ages are great, actually, yeah. But I think this age range, I think 6 to 10, it's at least I experience it now, but really these interests come out.
Yeah.
You know, our daughter is playing the cello. She's playing basketball, actually, which makes
me
happy.
Nice.
She does the ballet, and she does all that stuff. And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to drive you anywhere, everywhere. I don't care. Yeah. You know, I can work at night. I just want to see you, you know, grow as a person and see what you like or dislike. And I think that must be hard for you now being over here, because I guess the family's not there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that part is tough, being away from the boys for sure. You know, I'm still adjusting and figuring out how that's all going to work. But, you know, I mean, I think new experience, obviously continue to try to do what's best for my boys, and then go from there.
So it's a lot of FaceTime calls at night, or?
Yeah. When Elijah calls me, he likes to set up the camera so I can watch him play Roblox.
Mm.
Yeah.
Roblox. All right. Yeah. That's hopefully it never comes. I mean, I'm a big gamer, so
yeah.
Our daughter, she wants to play, like, was it Hogwarts Legacy? Or the Harry Potter game. I'm playing Battlefield myself, so but then she has to leave the room. But Roblox, we haven't touched on that yet. I hope, because it's just like, what is it, like Minecraft, right? Or did I?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Yeah. I mean, I don't play it, but he enjoys it. He really just wants me to watch him, so I just kind of sit there and
you just watch it.
Half watch him.
So, how's your life right now? I mean, I guess you're in the hotel, or in a hotel, or in an apartment already.
I don't even have an apartment or anything yet. I'm still in a hotel.
So is that kind of like you time, where you just really just follow your interest and, you know, play basketball and do your stuff, or is it something where you like feel alone right now?
I mean, probably both, right? But for most of my life, I mean, I've been kind of traveling, playing basketball, and relatively alone. So, you know, it's not the most foreign feeling in the world. And I think I'll probably start locking back into some of my interests in business and stuff like that in the next, you know, coming week or so. Right now, it's been adjusting, you know, getting the doctor's appointments out the way, like, you know, getting registered for the car, or just, you know, just all the little stuff that has to kind of take place so that you can at least feel, you know, comfortable in the spot and you know, catch up on sleep. That too, like, after we leave here, I'm definitely gonna take a nap. So, you know, all the small stuff.
But let's talk about the other interests. I mean, obviously you made headlines a couple of years ago because you wanted to, I don't know what the right term is, you have like bonds on your contract using crypto.
Yeah.
But until the NBA said, no, we're not gonna have that. Or did you change it around it so that you could have?
Yeah, I wanted to democratize basically my contract, and, you know, there was a cryptocurrency piece to it, because obviously, you know, I believe in Bitcoin and stuff like that. So, The NBA didn't necessarily love it. We kind of did a little bit more boring version of it, which, you know, was cool and all, and some of the fans had fun with it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it led me down just a further, you know, crypto rabbit hole, and have been able to meet like some dope people in the space, and partner with people, you know, like Flo and Roham, and just a lot of people, meet a lot of people. So, you know, it's been great.
So is this your main interest right now, is crypto, or is there anything else?
Nah, I don't think so. I guess you could say my biggest business outside of the NBA is crypto, but you know, right now I'm kind of just trying to see where basketball takes me, and then, you know, go from there.
So nothing you're reading right now, or reading up on something any in particular?
I mean, I'm always reading stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, you got the Fed cutting rates, and you know, we'll see what happens towards the end of the year. Some people think the bull run's over. Some people think it's still going to go. Some people think the cycle, 4-year cycle, is broken. It's going to be extended. They're tracking M2 money supply, like all types of stuff. So, you know, always trying to stay well versed. But, you know, yeah, it's, my focus is kind of just hooping.
So, maybe that's a sensitive topic you have to tell me if you don't want to talk about it. But obviously, you're an American, and you're outside the U.S. for the first time. Mm-hmm. And right now, obviously, in America, there's a lot of divide, you know, between the left and the right. And in the past, you've talked about this quite openly. And obviously, like, whoever, you know, kind of talks about these things in the U.S. gets backlash from one side or the other. So being outside for the first time, you know, for a longer period of time, does it change your view? I mean, obviously it's tough to say after a week, but obviously, you know, have people talked to you about Trump and whatever is going on at home?
Oh man, nah. not in the first week. Like I said, I think, you know, right now, and everybody's hitting me up. I'm usually waking up 4 a.m., jet lagged, whatever, sorry. Catching up on conversations. My perspective or anything hasn't necessarily like changed. I'm really just kind of trying to wait for the whirlwind to calm down.
Is it something that keeps you up at night, what's happening at home? I mean, obviously it's been happening for a couple of years now, but.
No, I mean, I think in life, like whatever, you know, country you represent, whatever political beliefs you have, like it still starts at a human level, right? And you're trying to be the best person you can be every single day, and you realize like a lot of this stuff is out of your hands, right? Like there's not much I can do if two presidents are mad at each other, right? Like all I can kind of do is try to make sure that I'm the best teammate, best father, best, you know, son, whatever it is. You know, and obviously you read things or try to, you know, stay up to date on the news, but none of that's in my control.
That's true. I mean, maybe that's a pretty good last verse for this podcast, man. Thanks for taking the time, and have a good nap.
Thank you, boss. Appreciate you.
Thanks, man.